This week in the Famicom Dojo podcast, we take a trip over to our friend's house where everything sounds different, find an old remake of an older game in Future Retro, and expand our vocabulary in Pile of Shame. This is episode 90 of Famicom Dojo. Do I sound 90? Hey Vink, how's it going?
It's going all right. It's actually Adam, Sean.
Oh, I'm not Sean.
Oh, okay. Well, who the hell are you?
Well, I'm Zach.
Oh, right, the guy I always do a podcast with.
Okay, so I think normally Sean and Vink are supposed to do Famicom Dojo right now, but I guess we'll just do it instead.
Sure, can't be that hard, can it?
Right, exactly. I mean, it's just the two of us, right? We'll be fine.
Yeah, there's no one else here, right?
Right. Is there anyone else here?
I'm here, Ernie.
Okay. Well, this is great because Famicom Dojo normally just has Sean and Vink, and here we got Zach and Adam and Ernie.
Great.
Well, anyway, since now we've. So if we're going to do Famicom Dojo, and by the way, April Fools, guys, this is the cast of No Topic Required, another podcast, friends of Sean's. I've actually been on the show, I think, once or twice before, so any Famicom Dojo devotees might still recognize my voice. I don't know if Adam has ever been on, but certainly Adam knows a thing or two about video games himself. So we're just going to do a regular Famicom Dojo episode. Isn't that fun?
Let's do it.
All right. So this is, if I recall the format of the show, they usually have some kind of open discussion at the top. And so one of the things I was thinking about, something that Vink and Sean haven't touched on, is you know, we're always talking about the video games that they played when they were younger and those kind of classics and stuff like that. And through the lens of certain kinds of experiences, I was thinking one of the most prevalent experiences as a young man that I had was that there were certain games you could play at home because those were your games, but then there was the games you could only play outside of the home because you didn't have that system or you didn't have that game, and so you would have like your best friend's house you would go over to play games. So I thought it'd be fun to discuss, you know, those games that you didn't necessarily own but you got to play a lot anyway just because you know, we're getting out of the house to do stuff like that.
Yes.
All right. I know that, I think, I don't know if I actually owned a Mortal Kombat game until I was much older. Like, I didn't have one or two or three. I probably didn't own a Mortal Kombat game until, like, the Xbox era. I think I got, like, one of those, it was Xbox or PS2, like, one of those classic collections where they had, like, all the old games on.
I think I still don't own a Mortal Kombat game. Mm-hmm.
But still, like, Mortal Kombat was a huge thing in the arcades.
Yes.
And, you know, everyone knew it. I mean, it's. I think this is, like, a really great, like, kind of nostalgia goggles kind of game because the original Mortal Kombat, MK2, these are, like, really, like, not, aside from the remembering the combinations, they're, like, not really technically proficient games.
Yeah, and a lot of the characters use very similar moves. Like, everyone you kind of push down and do that kind of weird uppercutty thing and stuff like that. Even more so than Street Fighter, that had, like, there were kinds of characters that had similar moves. And this is just, like,
it's just the basic moveset, the roundhouse kick, the sweep, the uppercut, all the punching. Like, all that was identical for every character. The only difference was the special moves. But still,
let's play Goro or something, you know?
Right. Well, you couldn't play Goro until like way later.
Yeah.
But the original Mortal Kombat was such a huge thing when I was a kid. I think mm-hmm. I was 13, maybe 14 when that game came out. So they put the RP-13, the Genesis version. Like, I knew, like, well, this is gonna be right up my alley.
I would have been a bit older, but Yeah, I was all over that kind of stuff, yeah. Right?
But yeah, a friend of mine had, I didn't have a Sega Genesis, I had a Super Nintendo, but I also knew the Super Nintendo version was censored. So I didn't even bother like going for it. It wasn't worth it to me. So I had a friend who lived like kind of like across the way, across the highway. I live near a highway, so I had to cross a highway to go to this guy's house. Which, in retrospect, thinking to myself, boy, I'm really lucky I didn't just get hit by a truck almost every day. I would go over to his house. We'd just be playing Mortal Kombat on Sega Genesis, which didn't even have enough buttons to like properly do
that. I hated that about the Genesis. Yeah. They made a 6-button controller eventually, right?
Yeah, for Street Fighter II Championship Edition. Mm-hmm. When they released that, but at the time, like I think the 6-button Mortal Kombat 2 had a 6-button setting, but Mortal Kombat 1 was like firmly in the 3-button era, and it worked with 3-button. I'm trying to remember how the buttons were even laid out. I remember that like just the A button was just like both kinds of punches, whether it was low punch or high punch, which really simplified an already simplified moveset and I also remember like the Sub-Zero's freeze like shot, whatever it's called, you could accomplish that without doing the quarter circle forward at all. Like I would just press the down forward diagonal and the punch button and it would just shoot it out.
Oh wow!
I don't know whether that was like a glitch or just like I was just happened to be hitting the pad just the right way to do it, but it seemed to work every time, if not like all the time. Of course, Sub-Zero and Scorpion were the only two characters that anyone really ever played as. I don't know anybody who played as Kano.
I never. I only played with Scorpion anyway.
Yeah.
In 2, I played with the guy with the sword arms.
Baraka.
Is that him?
Yes. Yeah. I think he was the cool. first character I played with in the arcade, and that was when they had the really bugged Babality things where you could turn him into a baby and still attack him. So I'd whip out like the blades and chop the baby up, and the baby would just be like,
"Ooh, that's gross."
Oh, that's extreme.
Yeah, I would like to remind that the panelists that this No Top Required is a completely uncensored and adult flavored podcast, and we're not going to be using our usual set of language on this particular show.
I guess we're going to tone it back.
Yeah, but we can still talk about chopping up babies because that was in a classic video game. That definitely happened.
Even if it was patched, it was patched out later on.
Yeah, baby Kung Lao, fair game.
Yeah.
I never owned a Mortal Kombat. We used to rent those games a lot. Mm-hmm. That's mostly how I played them. I didn't really have a friend that had them. But although I didn't have a huge fondness for the games, I love the crap out of the Mortal Kombat movie. And I rewatched it recently, and it does not hold up at all. No. Like, I find the Street Fighter movie really holds up. I did not find the Mortal Kombat movie held up at all. It just seemed cheap. What used to seem like really impressive and all the sets blew my mind just felt like very soundstagey and kind of cheap. I was like, oh well.
Yeah.
That's so sad. But you were more a Street Fighter kid, Zach, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I had Street Fighter 2 Turbo for Super NES, and I had the ASCII Super Advantage joystick, so I could play it, with
nice.
Real stick and buttons.
Yeah.
And so I abused that game to a significant degree. I could still play, like, I would say up through Super Street Fighter with any character. It doesn't matter. Like I could do a random shuffle. I could do any move from any character up through Super Street Fighter. After that, then I have to get specialized. I'm like, well, I can only pick. But if I get an alpha, I can only pick a handful of characters. And if I do pick like a guile, like I can only do the moves that are up through super. I don't remember.
Yes.
I don't know any of his newer movesets. So that was something evolved in Street Fighter 4 as well. I just didn't. It took so much. It became so deep.
It was so many characters. Yeah. Yeah.
And then
especially the super moves and stuff, right?
And then newer franchises like say Soul Calibur, you can forget about it. You know, if you play Soul Calibur, Tekken, DOA, like any newer
DOA is insane. Yeah,
any newer 3D fighting game, yeah. you pick maybe one. You have like the character you're good at, and the one you have a backup with, and then everybody else, you are just mashing buttons. Forget about it. You are just not going to learn them. Unless this is the only game you're going to play. You know, maybe that's because, you know, when I was 13, Street Fighter 2 was the only game I would play. You know,
it was king.
Well, it was not just king, but I mean, I was not emancipated. I did not have money for my own purposes. So I get Street Fighter 2 Turbo for Christmas or whatever that year.
Yeah,
and that was it. That was my one game. You know, I remember the magazine writing about Donkey Kong Country. If you play one game this year, and sure enough, that was the one game I played that year. One game in 1994, or whatever year that was, that Donkey Kong Country came out. And I played it to 100% multiple times. I remember having, there's three save files. I played 101% on all three save files.
All right, I was about to say it was 101%, and you said 100%. You missed that 1%, buddy.
Yeah. But I did it, yeah.
It's definitely worth it. That game is great.
Right. Adam, what other stuff did you have to venture out of the home to play?
So let's go back to the way beginning. My friend Raymond lived down the street, and he had a Sega. Mm-hmm. So we were a Nintendo family. So
everybody loves Raymond because of the Sega.
Yeah. So Raymond, our house was I grew up with four kids, in a family with four kids, three brothers and a sister. So the three brothers, we always played games. We always had people over. So there was always like an extra kid. And Raymond was the one kid for a few years who would come over every day on the weekends and every day during the summer. He would just come out and hang out with us. And we usually play games. So occasionally we would go to Raymond's house and play Sega. So we would play like Shinobi. There weren't like a ton of Sega games. It was like Shinobi and that little like there was like some kind of like motorcycle type game.
No, Road Rash.
Rash?
Road Rash.
Road Rash. Yeah, maybe. It like came with the system. Like you didn't even have to put a cartridge in, I think.
Weird.
It was a weird thing.
Adam, just to clarify, you're saying Sega, and I know we've got some hardcore purists. In the listing base for this particular podcast.
Yes.
Are we talking about Sega Genesis or Master System?
The Sega Master System.
Oh, okay.
The old one, right?
Because it's fair to call the NES the Nintendo because it was the only one. It was the only one at the time. So if you say the Sega, yes. I think a lot of people would just refer to the Genesis. But if you're talking about the Master System, that's fair.
I didn't even know Genesis.
That was the Sega.
I didn't even know there was a Master System until I was an adult. I was like, what? I'd never even seen that anywhere.
All my friends had Super Nintendos, so we ended up giving our friend Raymond our Atari and our whatever we had, like 30-40 games with it. So at the time was like, well, we're playing Nintendo, we're never going to play this again. And now in retrospect I'm like it'd be kind of cool to have that Atari to like play these kind of retro games, but I don't know how much I would ever really use that. Right,
well, now you can buy an Atari 2600 like remake system with probably every game you had just built into it for like $30 or $40. So
that's super cheap.
I bet Urban Outfitters has it.
Yeah. And those the old joysticks we had were all busted. Like they fell apart. They were pretty cheap. Like most Nintendo controllers I have are falling apart. Right, I probably have like, you know, four busted controllers for every one that still works. So just the buttons don't work right. Like this one has no start, and this one the right doesn't work right, and this one has a fidgety B or whatever. Right?
I thought those controllers were like some of the sturdiest of ever.
Which ones? The Nintendo?
Yeah, the original. They're square. There's only like a handful of buttons. How badly? I mean, yeah, you abuse them a lot, but I thought they were pretty sturdy compared to like Nintendo 64 and Super Nintendo controllers, which I always had to like find myself opening and repairing because, rage smash it and we'd have to rebuild it.
My big issue with the N64 controllers was
the thumbstick.
The thumbstick having the zero axis, or just constantly having to reset that thing.
Yeah.
If you had it tilted a little bit when you turned the system on, and it's at the zero point, like off to the left or something like that, you could really mess with someone's Mario Kart game.
If you played Mario Party even a little bit, you screwed up that controller.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty
yeah.
bad.
It's cranking it.
Ah. That joystick had a lot of use.
Mm-hmm. And you honestly, like, Super Mario Kart, that was the type of game that my friends would come over to play at my house.
Yeah.
Mr. Popular.
I don't know if I knew other people who had Super NES, but I don't know if I knew anybody who had a Super Mario Kart game. And so, like, anytime we had any kind of, like, afternoon or sleepover or whatever, you know, friends coming over to hang out, we would end up playing Super Mario Kart for, you know, hours on end. And,
yeah.
You know, usually it'd be like, you know, like, I had a little brother, and he would have, like, one friend over, or I would have one friend over. So it'd be three of us. So Super Mario Kart's a two-player game. So it'd end up being this thing of, like, you know, loser stays, or the loser leaves, and then the winner stays.
Yeah,
just to kind of keep things fair.
I got winner.
Mm, yeah, exactly. I got winner.
Yeah,
that was a big thing.
So all the time. So we made the most out of even a two player game, having somebody like constantly like waiting in the wings to play, and that really, you know, evolved once you got into the Mario Kart 64, and you could have four players.
Oh yeah, game changer.
But still, I had like two controllers, so a lot of times we would just have just two people until other friends of mine got N64s. They would just bring controllers.
Yes,
over.
Yeah, that was a big thing. Come over, bring your controller, and then we'd play.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's still a big thing.
Yeah. Well, I remember when I bought an Xbox, I had the one controller, and then I think the week that Halo 2 came out, I bought three more. Because nobody else I knew had an Xbox, but everyone wanted to come over to play Halo 2, and so we would end up doing. So I had a 42-inch TV at the time, which was like at the time huge. I mean, it's still pretty big, but it's like at the time it was like the biggest TV anybody had ever seen. I was fairly flush with cash in 2004, so I didn't have as many responsibilities then, so I could just go ahead and buy this gigantic projection TV, and so we play Xbox on four-player split screen. Yeah, and so I don't know why I'm even talking about this, you know, all this loser stuff when I was, you know, 13. How about the time when I was 24 and we're all playing Halo 2 on this giant TV? We would have these huge game nights. Sean, normal Famicom Dojo host, and then Phil Bond, who's also a, you know, I don't know if he's been on the podcast, but he's definitely been enough of the Famicom Dojo videos. And another friend of ours, Sam, we would stay up until like, you know, 3 a.m. We'd create a party on Xbox Live, and we would just take on challengers.
Hold on, parties didn't exist back then, okay?
Well, but still,
it was just clans.
In any case, it was our little. Every fake trout was my Xbox Live handle, on like fake trout 1, fake trout 2, fake trout 3.
Yes. We used to have the other characters like on my Xbox account that would like, Steve Saunders was like, you know, we'd always make fun of the guy who was playing Steve Saunders, who would always die in some game because he's on there, right?
Boy, no.
I always had personalized profiles for anybody that would come over. Spotted Sea Cow, and
it's a good idea.
Well, boy, the dojo listeners are going to have no idea what you guys are talking about. Steve Saunders, Spotted Sea Cow, these are all in references. Actually, the people on our regular podcast are not going to get these jokes. These are just for me.
Too obscure, yeah.
Far too obscure. Anyway, so, but yeah, well my buddies, I mean, I remember Sean had an orange, Halo Man, Master Chief guy, and so everyone had their own guys, but when you were playing on Xbox, you had to have the Xbox Live tag of the main gold account holder. Actually, it wasn't even gold; it was just an Xbox Live account. That's all it was back then. I just remember buying Dr. Pepper Red Fusion, like a case of that stuff. Boy, that takes me back too. How come they don't make that anymore? And just playing that for hours and hours on end, because I was the only guy with the Xbox. I mean, once the Xbox 360 came out, almost everybody I knew got one, but But back in 2004, it's just really just me and you, Ernie. We were the only two people with an Xbox, so we would start playing. We would play online with each other.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of getting away from playing with friends at home.
Mm-hmm. That kind of revolutionized the you know, hanging out with somebody and playing on the couch type thing. But I think it's
I kind of miss that, like going over. Yeah. Instead of being like, hey, are you going to be home at this time so we can play together and connect and all this? And it's like,
yeah. Well, now I've got friends who live like, you know, a half mile away from me who I will play online with because it's just easier than having them come over here and making sure that I've, you know, I've cleaned the living room and that's okay to have someone over.
But I kind of miss having the people over and, you know, like, oh, let's order a pizza and, you know, like moving the couch or whatever, moving a big screen TV to the living room or something like that, you know? That was kind
of
fun.
Yeah. Speaking of Soul Calibur, like the Phil Bond, when I had an apartment with him, actually I lived with Sean for a short period of time. That's essentially how I know Sean, really, is that we were roommates for a brief period of time. And, Ernie's chiming in. Who even said Soul Calibur? I said Soul Calibur a while ago. But speaking of Soul Calibur, we used to have these Soul Calibur nights. We played Soul Calibur 2 at an arcade in Madison, Wisconsin. On Tuesday nights, they did a tournament night. So you buy in, pay $2 to play the tournament. And when the arcade closed down at like 9:30, whenever the mall closed, like half the arcade would empty out into our apartment. And we had two TVs. I had the big 42-inch TV I mentioned before. And I also had like an older 27-inch. We just put them side by side, and we run a PS2 and a GameCube so we could play Soul Calibur on two TVs at the same time. And we would still play until like 4 a.m. I remember going like 30 rounds in a row with the guy who was like super good, Jimmy, and just never him letting me even win one round. And I finally, that was a time when I threw the controller in rage. It's like I used a lot of choice words and just with pretending, why can't you just let me win one? Just let me win one. He was not the type of guy to let someone win. He did not think I would learn anything by letting me get like a free hit in. So he would destroy me and be like, and he would just be like, well, you need to do this. I'm like, I can't do that. I'm not that good. Just let me hit you. So it never worked out like that with Jimmy. So I just knew later just don't play against Jimmy. I would watch him. I would pick up stuff from him, but I knew it would just throw me through the roof if I played with him. Yeah, you know, as an adult here, I've got like I've kind of got access to. I mean, I don't have any of the newer generation systems, the one or the PS4. But I mean, it's for like the last 3 years, I've had, you know, on my TV the Wii, the PS3, the Xbox 360, and I've been just kind of like, okay, I can play whatever game that comes out. I mean, unless it's on a PC because I run a Mac, so I'm still kind of silly. But still, it's like, you know, any game that comes out, I can have access to, and that was really nice. But that kind of goes back to why you have this best friend's house thing, because you had somebody who had the Sega, and you didn't have the Sega. Somebody had the PlayStation. You had the N64.
Yeah.
And were you an N64 or a PlayStation fan? We do have both.
I had the N64. We originally did not have a PlayStation, but I had some friends who got a PlayStation. The Deco was, they were brothers, so it was their last name. So we would go there and we would play whatever. Like, I remember playing Final Fantasy VII there for the first time, and I played that through a bit. But my brother ended up buying a PlayStation, so then we caught up and whatever. So for a while, that was kind of like a cool thing. I remember, like, my buddy had the PS3 before we did, so I went and we played PS3 at his place, but then I ended up getting it, so it wasn't a big deal. My buddy had a Vectrex, which was this really cool system. It was all vector-based graphics. So most of the game systems that we're used to from when we were kids were all like pixel-based, right? Like your Nintendos and even your Ataris to some extent. It's all shapes, but all these vector-based games, they use like a whole different way of producing the graphics. So if you remember the old Star Trek. Sorry, that's a terrible mistake to game. The old Star Wars game had these kind of, it's all made out of lines. The old Asteroids game had the same thing. It was all these lines.
Unfilled polygons, you know, just shapes.
It was really cool. He just had this Vectrex, and it was kind of fun to play. But when I played it, this was like probably like past, this is like Super Nintendo and beyond time. So obviously gaming had evolved quite a bit since then, but it was fun to play. And I remember this game, Spike, and we would play, and it was like, Spike, oh no, Molly, and you would go, whatever, try to save Molly or something like that. It was fun. That's mainly the game that I remember on the Vectrex. And he's probably still got it kicking around, his parents' basement, I guess, and I'll have to ask him about that.
Wow, so you were playing retro games at a time when people are thinking the time that you were playing it was retro games.
Oh, for sure. Like when I was, during the Super Nintendo era, I used to go back and play like the old Nintendo games and think they were like old school and stuff like that, right?
Vectrex really would be.
And Vectrex, it was really old school. When it was the Nintendo era, I didn't have a full appreciation for the retro gaming of like the Atari era, but then anything when I was Super Nintendo and beyond, I definitely had that sort of sentimentality about the old games, you know? Good times.
All right, Ernie, what you been playing at your buddy's house?
We did a lot of, unlike other people, we didn't do a whole lot of like multiplayer, two player, three, four player. We didn't know anybody with a multi-tap, so we played two player games. But we also played a lot of single player games that we would alternate. So some of the biggest multiplayer games we played would be things like Turtles in Time, because we were, you know, big into Ninja Turtles. Who isn't?
Yeah.
Turtles in Time was awesome. And we'd play through the whole game, and we'd take turns. Like, I guess when somebody hit like a continue spot because you'd lost all your lives, we'd switch off. And we'd go through the whole game in one sitting and, you know, just beat it. And we'd also challenge ourselves to do things like go through the game, and there's that one move where if you got close enough to the foot soldier guy, you could fling him towards the screen on the Super Nintendo version.
Mode 7.
Yeah.
So we did like... We did an entire game where the only foot soldiers we killed were using that.
Whoa.
Just to challenge ourselves to see how high of a score we can get. So, you know, we tried to do that, and we got it pretty good. And we beat it. And, you know, it was good times. And then other games we'd play, obviously, Mario Kart. Mostly battle mode. I don't know about other people.
Battle mode was the only mode. It wasn't until, like, years later. It's like, what, you guys race?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Battle mode was the only mode. Nobody cared about single racing. It was boring. Battle mode was about like a battle of the wits.
I didn't know that the 150cc like thing existed until like after I had that game for like 2 years. I didn't know like, that there was the other, because after you like race through and like get gold cups and all the 100s, then you get like four more tracks and the 150cc class. I didn't even know this existed.
Rainbow Cup.
I never saw Rainbow Cup or whatever, Rainbow Road, until like after I had that game for like 2 or 3 years.
Uh-huh.
Because all we ever did was battle mode. No, not a lot of games were battle.
We played racing mode once in a while, but it was just like, you know, whatever. But the battle mode, it was so intense because we'd play psychological warfare on each other. We would play on I believe it was the fourth battle mode map, which is, there was only four maps.
Right.
Which was a square grid with one track around the other track around the other track. So I think it was like four or five lines around each other with breaks, you know, on the left, on the top, on the right, on the bottom. And, you know, we'd be collecting items, and I'd be in one lane, the other guy would be in the other lane, and somebody would get like a red shell and somebody else would get a feather. And we'd be like waiting for that gap to come through, and we'd try to psych each other out by like doing the sound effect for the feather sound or the red shell sound to psych each other out into using the other weapon. And you're like, oh, I got you. Boom. Oh, I busted your balloons. And, you know, that's how we play each other. And then, you know, of course, a lot of Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, a little bit of Killer Instinct on the Super Nintendo era. We take turns going through Street Fighter and losing to M. Bison's scissor kick 600 times until whoever beat him was the big winner of the day. And then Mortal Kombat was like practically an exercise in who can beat each other first and get the fatality in. Which was, you know, we'd get the list from online or whatever sources, like back then. you could get like printed sources from the arcade itself. I'm like, oh man, you got a list, you know, buy that for like a dollar or whatever.
Yeah, I had one buddy who had like CompuServe and he printed out the whole list of Mortal Kombat moves. Mortal Kombat 2, when it was still in arcades, they would get regular updates. I'm like, oh, this move got added. We had an arcade near me that got like regular updates because Mortal Kombat was like far from final when it first hit arcades. There was multiple revisions of that game. You think about, games today have patches and all that stuff. Man, arcade games had patches back then. You had to get I remember there was half the characters in Mortal Kombat 2 didn't have fatalities when that game launched.
Jeez.
Yeah, I remember it was like a while before. It wasn't just that people couldn't find them yet. It was like they just weren't baked into the game yet. And then like another revision brought in all the fatalities, and then they added in the fatalities, and then they added all this other stuff. You mean, I'm sure there's literature out there about all that stuff, you know, all the revisions. But yeah.
Arcade revisions were fun. They were so fun because some places wouldn't upgrade. So there was this place I would go to as a kid, play Street Fighter, and there was this weird glitch where the person could just like do a dragon punch repeatedly, and he could just keep going up and up and up. And once he passed the top of the screen, he'd come up through the bottom, and you keep going up and up and up through the top, through the bottom, through the top, through the bottom. And when he stopped, he'd fall as many times as he passed through until he hit the ground. So you could just like try to uppercut somebody whenever you could, you know, come through the bottom.
Boy, that is a glitch. I've never even heard of that one.
I played it and it was ridiculous. Wow. I couldn't believe. And this was like way after the game. It had been out for a long time. So this place just was like, yeah, whatever. Leave it there. Who cares? They never upgraded it.
Yeah, if they never got the upgraded board, then that would they even know.
They didn't care. So, and then other games, that's for the Super Nintendo era. I didn't have the same big gaming group that I did for the Super Nintendo era as I did for the 64-bit era. But what I do remember was playing a lot of NBA Jam Hang Time with me and my friend. And we played it the whole way through. And this game had like a point reward system where you could use to upgrade your character stats until you maxed out each individual stat. And we made a perfect characters, both of us. And then we took it to school because we had a... You could play the games in the school. And we played NBA Hang Time, and we just trounced everybody because our characters were perfect and fast, and they had the highest like hang jumps or whatever they had back then.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And
trolling these guys. You're like, they're...
Yeah, we were really the, like, oh, you guys have everything, you know. Mm-hmm. And then, what's that?
Well, both of you guys have written in the various show notes here that we're kind of going off of that you played GoldenEye, and I just wish I had experience with GoldenEye that I could even use to segue into this. But it's like I remember playing the single player mode. It's like, this is okay. We played a little bit of the multiplayer, but it's like I never even owned this game.
You played the wrong mode for sure.
I never even owned this game, but people will always be like, oh, we gotta play GoldenEye. And as I was saying, you know, I would host a lot of times, and we'd have the N64 playing. I used to have a band when I was in high school, and band practice just evolved into play GoldenEye or Mario Kart virtually every single time.
And how come you didn't join in on the GoldenEye?
Well, I did, but it's just it wasn't like as interesting to me as Mario Kart. I don't know what it was. Mm. I mean, now I'm like I play so many first person shooters. You would think I'm just on the verge of a murderous rampage at any given moment, but. But it's like at the time, it just didn't appeal to me. I don't know.
I think for me, like it's so dated. I don't know if I could go back to it. But at the time, it was so awesome. Yeah. Even though you couldn't jump down from platforms like any other game now, there's a walkway. Let me jump down to the first floor. You couldn't do that in GoldenEye. It was so limited, but it was a ridiculous amount of fun. Four players. Four player split screen, even though it's split screen, and anybody who's played split screen knows how
lagging.
Terrible.
Oh, yeah. That was one of the reasons why I didn't really like it. It's like, oh, well, the frame rate's like 5 frames per second. So,
no, like the frame rate, I don't even remember it being a big deal. It was just being able to play with that many people, and the maps were good, and the gameplay was fun, and the weapons were really cool. It was just so much fun.
They really did something about the game. I mean, it's like a well-known fact that Rare put in the multiplayer like probably like 5 or 6 weeks before the game went gold, before they shipped it off to Nintendo, and only like a handful of people even knew that multiplayer mode was even in there. And it's kind of amazing how they shaped the future of gaming with the couple people making it on a lark. You know, they didn't even have rights to some of the characters they put in the multiplayer game. They got like, that's part of the reason why the game's like never been re-released. It's just clearing off those stuff. But really, if you want some help with the nostalgia goggles with GoldenEye, I would heartily recommend to anyone listening who doesn't necessarily who wants to pick up GoldenEye, but goes like, it's not going to be as good as I remember. Check out the Time Splitter series. A lot of ex-Rare people went on to play that game. I think Time Splitters 2 and 3 on the. I think
both felt those came the same.
Out, yeah, I think both those came out on GameCube and PS2 and Xbox. I think so. If you have any of those systems, you can play Time Splitters 2 or 3. It does. It feels exactly like the GoldenEye games. There's a lot more customization. There's a map builder in those two, but.
I remember picking it up and I was like, oh, this is, you know, it's like I'm playing GoldenEye again, but I can make my own maps. And I had so many ideas and I didn't have the time to make it. So I never made a lot of maps, but it had that same feel and I had that same excitement to make maps. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I want to make some GoldenEye maps. I want to make my own maps. It never happened because, you know, time and online wasn't really a big thing back then. I don't think there was a lot of people uploading like a lot of really great maps like in other first person shooters today. Mm-hmm. They didn't have that same community, the same kind of system for uploading and downloading and sharing that they do now in a lot of other games, which is really great.
Yeah.
But it had the same feel, the same way you would like walk down a corridor or walk down the scaling of the way that everything moved towards you as you walked. It felt the same. It was like GoldenEye and Perfect Dark, which was another good game.
All right, good talk. This is a really great great little topic here. I'm glad. I want to hear from Sean and Vink about this exact topic. So,
yes.
Oh, Ernie, you have one more you want to throw in?
Yeah, this is a short one, so you don't have to feel too bad about including it, but we played a lot of F-Zero X. We didn't play F-Zero back in the day. I don't know if it had a two-player mode split screen
not.
On. All right,
not
so that's why we didn't.
Yeah.
That's why you didn't play it. But F-Zero X, we played that against the rules. Our whole objective of playing that game was to be like, who can ram the other person off the track first? That was it.
Awesome.
That was it.
Awesome.
Let's drive as fast as we can backwards into the other.
No, we didn't play. We didn't drive backwards, but we would try to win the race and we would try to shove each other off because that was the most fun we could think of in that game. The game was fun, but I loved like trying to like doing the double tap on the trigger buttons or whatever they were, and like knocking the guy over. And I don't feel like I could really capture that same kind of fun in the F-Zero GameCube game. Mm-hmm. What was it called?
GX.
GX, because it was like too fast and it was way more about racing.
Yeah.
But F-Zero X.
It was made by Sega, which means it was impossible.
Impossible to do anything.
Right. I mean, Sega had some really great designers back then, really tight controls, really amazing design, but it's like they made the game difficulty so high that it really, I mean, in the era before you had achievements, it was an achievement to get to some of those later tracks because that game was so hard. It was hard.
I bought the game and I don't think I finished it because the campaign or the story mode was so tough. And I was like, I just want to push some guys over and you know, go really fast. But I can't even do that because there's like a pillar everywhere I want to drive.
Well, not only that, but it had all the tracks and the cars from the F-Zero arcade system on disc that you could unlock eventually. But it was so hard to get it that, like, you know, most people, it's like just never even saw it. So, on the
I don't think I even knew that.
Yeah, yeah, they're on the disc. There's only two ways to get it. You either got to like beat it on the hardest difficulty level or whatever to unlock those tracks, or if you took your memory card to the F-Zero arcade machine and put a save file on there, any track you raced on the arcade machine, you could then unlock for use on the home, which meant that really all you had to do was like play whatever it was, 5 games in the arcade machine in order to get them all, which, you know, but
I mean, yeah, I'm sorry. If you live in a good area for gaming, like I think you probably did, mm-hmm. you could probably accomplish that. But for me, no Dave and Buster's, no whatever this, random arcade that we still had open at the time even had that game.
Are you kidding? I lived in Madison, Wisconsin. The closest machine we knew of was in Chicago. That's a 2.5-hour drive.
Well, there you go. For Miami, it was probably like Atlanta or maybe Tampa, Orlando. I don't know.
I refuse to believe there's not a good arcade in Miami.
Miami does not have the same scene for like anything. Like the biggest arcade I grew up going to was like chopped in half, and then half of that is just like arcade games, and the other half is like, here's a TV with like a fold-out table and some consoles attached to it so you can play with other people.
Sounds pretty cool though. Anyway,
but it's super dead. It's not. It doesn't look like you could walk in and have fun.
Yeah, I guess so. All right, moving into future retro. I hope I'm doing these segments in order. I'm playing it off memory here.
There's supposed to be like a chime or something,
right?
Before we go between segments.
Bing.
Well, I edit that in.
Well, okay. That's fine. So listeners, you just heard the chime.
They already heard the chime. We're just killing Ooh, time now.
Good chime, guys.
That's gonna be my new ringtone.
We're really breaking the fourth wall with this podcast. So, the future retro, and this is, I understand, it's supposed to be modern games that will be remembered as classics later. That's my takeaway for this particular theme. And my pick for this is the Uncharted series. I know we're on the verge of a new generation. That I know there's another Uncharted game coming for the PS4 at some point. But I think part of the reason why I'm mentioning this is because I don't think I've ever heard Sean or Vink talk about Uncharted. And these are amazing games.
Because they're not Nintendo games.
they still talk about Sony and Microsoft and EA and Activision. They talk about all sorts of other stuff. I don't remember. I don't think either of them owns a PS3 in that same way. And I really got to say, if you have a PS3 and you've not played the Uncharted games, I'm sure you can get all of them. Let me rewind that back here. If you don't have a PS3, now is the time to get one. Honestly. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to dissuade you from buying a Wii U or PS4 or Xbox One or whatever you were planning to buy next. But I'm just saying, you could probably get a used PS3 for a very low price. And all of the best games that have come out for the PS3 over like the last 6 years or 7 years, however long it's been, are all like $20. That's what I'm doing right now. I've had a PS3 for a few years. I was basically only buying like first-party games. Here and there, and so it's like I bought Uncharted 3 at full price because I played Uncharted 1 and 2 leading up to that.
Yeah,
and it was just like, now I'm at this point where I'm just buying, you know, these $20 games that are just all amazing because they've just been out for 5 years. this is the amazing time to really really play the PS3. So I'm just going to say, shout out to the PS3. Get the Uncharted games. I don't know how replayable they are, just to be totally honest. Because they're thrill rides. They're like roller coaster rides. But once you get but because they're roller coaster rides, there's a lot of stuff that's just really on rails. There's a bit of discovery that you get from looking for like little treasures and jewels and baubles along the way. But
collectibles.
Yeah, all the collectibles, that's the word I was looking for. But for the most part, like, you know, all the plot points, all the major decisions are all like really set. For most of the fights you'll come into, there's really only one or two ways to go into any given situation, and if you deviate from that, you're really not going to get very far.
You either win or you die.
Yeah, I remember thinking specifically that the plot for Uncharted 3, Drake's Deception, was really good. The acting's amazing. The visuals are really great too. The sound, like everything, just hits the mark. But if you go down the little hallway, that's not the one that you're supposed to go down, you're just going to hit a dead end. There's nothing there. There's no, like, exploring, which really doesn't make any sense for a game called Uncharted. But it really does not reward the exploring that well. Like, at most, you might find, like, a more powerful gun. I remember specifically in Uncharted 3, there's a chase scene, and if you don't do it exactly like you're supposed to do it, it's practically like a quick time event. If you don't do it exactly like you're supposed to do it, you will start over. That's it. But like I said, the acting, the visuals, the plot, everything about this just hits on all cylinders. They are really exciting games. You will not have a better, like, you know, whatever 6 to 8 hour experience with a game than these. And then if you feel like you're totally done with them and you can sell them or whatever, I don't tell you what to do with your games afterwards. But I personally am holding on to them because I know at some point I'm going to give them to my son and he's going to be like, wow, this is amazing. Because they're on that same level of like, of like wonder and excitement that you would get from like a classic adventure movie, like an Indiana Jones type thing. I mean, I know that's what it's aping, but I would say that it apes the Indiana Jones thing so well that I would honestly put on the same tier as an Indiana Jones experience. Adam, what's your pick?
My future retro. So I hope this isn't too old. My future retro is Mega Man Powered Up for the PSP. I entered the PSP very late in the game, and I got it sort of when it was on the down. So this was, I don't know how, probably like 2 years ago. Does that make sense? Maybe three?
I think the PSP was on the down probably about 6 months after launch.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I mean, I had friends who bought the PSP, and they were, you know, they were considered late adopters, and it was pretty early on. But yeah, I bought it, and this Mega Man Powered Up game was kind of old, and my brother had a PSP, and he, like, whatever, he jailbroke it or whatever you call it, and he had all the pirated games. And he's like, this Mega Man game's all right. And I'm like, fine, bought it for whatever, $20 or something at Walmart. It is a, how do I explain this game? It's a remake of Mega Man 1, but remade with, like chibi graphics, right? Like, you know, little guys with big heads. So it's still, the gameplay is mostly maintained, the side scrolling and everything. But there's all, it's like tons of weird bonuses. So like I go and then I can play Cutman level, and then I can play, I get the Cutman weapon, or I can play as Cutman. You can play as Roll, so you could like, you could just play just as normal Roll, and then you could download like all sorts of weird Roll costumes. So you'd be like, here's Roll ready for Christmas with like a Santa suit, or here's Roll with you know, Halloween witch's costume or whatever. So that was just a little cool thing. And then they had all these, there was like a level designer, and you could go online and you could download like levels. So Capcom would put out certain levels, or you could download like other levels that other, like, you know, crazy Japanese people like created that were super hard. And it had a couple extra guys, and it was like, it really wasn't just a port of Mega Man 1. It was a whole other experience. And because of the way you could play as so many different characters, there was just like, you could just keep replaying this game. You wouldn't get tired of it because there were special challenges for every level to do it as every different character and stuff like that. And it was amazing. And I kept waiting for there to be a Mega Man 2 Powered Up, or Powered Up 2 or whatever, one based on my favorite Mega Man game, Mega Man 2. That's debatable. Some people like 3, whatever. They're wrong. That's cool, but they can have an opinion.
I like 3.
That's cool. It's an enjoyable game. It's, you know, it's arguably the second best Mega Man game.
I could not beat 2 back in the day, so there's a bias there.
2 is hard.
I've played all the way up through 2 to the very last boss and have never actually defeated the last boss.
Oh, Bubbles. She's Bubbles.
Well, I know it's bubbles, but it's but I always like I run out of I'm either out of energy or like I'm down to like so few hits by that point that I just can't get enough into it.
And it's hard to get your to it's yeah, it's hard to fill up your power ups when you if you die.
I couldn't beat the Quick Man stage. I had so much trouble with that as a kid.
Yeah, use Flash Man to freeze the things.
The beams got me.
Yeah. Yeah, you freeze the beams.
I was a kid. I didn't know.
Yeah, I know. So, yeah, so I'd like when I was a kid, I played 2 and 3, and I finished those, and that was not too bad. But I always had a major problem with 1. 1 is a hard game. So, like, powered up is kind of a good way to play that game. And, you know, will it really be future retro? You know, will people be playing it
in a way-
10, 20? 20 years, I don't know. It's hard to tell.
In a way, Mega Man Powered Up itself is future retro because it's a future release of a retro game.
Once it came out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know, like, I don't know if there will be a future retro world for the PSP, right? Like, will you need a PSP to play it?
Yeah.
I would love to see this game as downloadable on the Vita or whatever, right?
It looks like it's available on PlayStation Network, but only in Japan. Like there was no, there's no US release of it on US PlayStation Network
because Capcom hates its fans.
They say that it's due to some technical difficulty. So I don't know.
Garbage.
I which considering the treatment of Mega Man over the last couple of years by Capcom, I would have to agree.
yeah,
I just don't seem to want to do this character anymore.
Hey, you guys like this game? Cancel.
On the other hand, Mega Man Powered Up sold poorly. Maverick Hunter X sold poorly. Like the last couple of Mega Man games they've tried to do did not do that well. But I think that it's and so the only ones they're willing to make are ones like 9 and 10 where I'm sure they only spent a fraction of the budget for just the
But it's because they put them on I'm sorry, but they put them on like actual consoles. I got so annoyed every time they put like a game that I wanted to play on the DS or the Vita or the one before Vita, sorry. The
regular PSP.
PSP. Yeah. And it's like, I don't have those systems. I'm not going to buy them just for Kingdom Hearts or Mega Man. And I really wanted to play Mega Man X Maverick Hunter, but they did that. And I was like, well, I guess I'm never going to play that. So it kind of sucked.
Kingdom Hearts is probably the only, the other awesome PSP game, the Kingdom Hearts Birth by Sleep game on PSP. It's freaking awesome.
I would love if they did like a you know like an arcade or live or I don't know what it's called the Wii Marketplace or Nintendo Marketplace to download it, put it out there because people want to play that. They can make money off of it. Do it. I totally wanted to play all those Kingdom Hearts games, but they're on systems I didn't have because I had the home console systems and only a DS. Well, I couldn't play a lot of.
Now's the time to get a PlayStation 3 because I'm pretty sure there's like a there's a Kingdom Hearts like set that has all the Kingdom Hearts games like on one disc.
I'm sorry, but by this point, I'm kind of like, one.
Yeah.
At this point, I'm kind of like, I've lost interest. I don't know if I'd even like be interested in playing Kingdom Hearts 3 at this point after all the like side story releases on like these minor systems, Vita and I think that. They released one on the N-Gage. I was like, what? Why would you do that? I don't know.
All right, Ernie. So what's your future retro pick?
I'm picking... It's not too old and it's not too new, but I'm going with Dead Space because...
Good
game. For me... Yeah. It was... for me, I think like Resident Evil kind of lost its initial appeal of survival horror by switching to action once they hit with Resident Evil 4. But Dead Space... came out and they like I feel like they picked up right where Resident Evil started off with their whole idea of survival horror, even though it was in a different like completely different scene, you know, in space, future, whatever.
I kind of like the setting better on Dead Space personally. That's more my alley.
It's got a great setting. It's future. It's dark. It's scary. It's just like, I mean, I don't know if it's just like, but it's very much like Aliens, the second film. There's a lot of moody atmosphere, a lot of things that set the mood to like scare you. It took me a week to get through, I think, chapter one because I was so scared because of the fake outs they were throwing at you. You're like, oh, lights are going off. But then nothing happened. lights, and the lights turn on, and you're like, "What? Where's it going to come from? I'm so scared." But after I got that over that, and I got through the learning curve, and I started playing, and I started collecting more ammo, it was fun. It was fun in the same way that the original Resident Evil games were fun. You collect ammo from killing enemies. There were little upgrades that helped along the way. There were awesome boss fights. The story was good. After Dead Space 3, it was less survival horror and more along the lines of action, like pure action, in the same way that Resident Evil 4 was, which neither Resident Evil 4 or Dead Space are bad games. I like them just the same, and they were pretty different on their respective franchises, but I thought they were a lot of fun. And I would love to play more of these games again. More Dead Space than Resident Evil, because I think Resident Evil's kind of strayed too far away from its original setup, and I don't think it can go back with as far as the story has gone through. But Dead Space can easily go back to a very creepy, moody survival horror, very scary type of stuff. I'm not easily scared, but there were a lot of moments where I was like, oh, it scared me, and I'd jump up and I'd be very suspenseful and I'd be very careful with my ammo, and I'd hit the safe spots every single time that I could to try to avoid having to do the scary parts again, which, after the first time. Actually, the thing with Dead Space was, I remember I don't know about the second or third one, but I know the first one, they would every time you go into different rooms, I'm pretty sure they alternated the enemy placements and some of the actions. So, like, you go through a room and you get killed because you got taken by surprise and you're low on health or whatever. You go into the room again, and it's different. The enemy's not there. He pops up at a different place, or there's a different number of enemies or something like that. And it was kind of fun. I don't know if the later games do that, but it'd be cool if they, they started going back to their roots for the next Dead Space game. Because if they keep going the route of Dead Space 3 with pure action, like Hollywood action, which I felt Resident Evil 4 was like, I'm going to probably start losing interest because I never played Resident Evil 5 or 6.
I really enjoyed the first Dead Space game. We're getting ahead of ourselves, but Dead Space Extraction on Wii, I've had that since I think it came out. I've still not played it. It's like,
which one was that?
Dead Space Extraction. It was like a prequel to the first Dead Space game. It's like takes place on that same ship, like when those, what are they called, necromorphs, whatever. When they start taking over the ship, but it's like an on rails kind of like light gun shooter. So you just point your Wiimote and just blast stuff.
Yeah.
But it's as I understand, it's a fun light gun exposition game. And so I've been meaning to play it for a long time, but it's like I just haven't had a chance. Like I bought it whenever it came out, 2007, 2000. No, couldn't have been 2007, 2008 maybe, 9. No, it must have been 9.
Is it more like the House of the Dead kind of arcades monster shooter?
I have no idea. I've never even actually popped it into my Wii. I've had it just in my pile of Wii games for a long time. So here's a good segue into our next segment. They call it pile of shame, but I actually found a Japanese word for it. So I'm going to contribute something to the Famicom Dojo lexicon right now. Sondoku. Sondoku.
Sondoku.
This is a word meaning buying books and not reading them, or letting books pile up unread on shelves or floors or nightstands. So Sondoku. While we're talking about games, it sounds like it fits us to a T. So this is pile of shame. So I would have to say Dead Space Extractions on my pile, but actually that isn't even the one I'd written down. I mentioned before I really like first person shooter games. I adored the first Borderlands game. I thought what it lacked in plot, it made up for in really great personalities from a lot of the side characters, really funny dialogue, and just inventive. gameplay options because there was just so many weapons with so many different modifications that are on them. You know, one gun that would cause fire, one gun that would charge electricity. You had all sorts of like ability trees. I mean, it was a role playing game wrapped in a first person shooter body. And what was nice about it is that you didn't actually have to be super good at first-person shooters to have a good time with this game. So anybody who's hesitated about it because they're not real good with the headshots, the guns are all about firepower. I mean, headshots count, but on the other hand, it's raw firepower will get you through anything. So if you just find like a stronger gun and just one that's that's up to the next level, then that's all you really need to do to beat the next guy. As long as you can roughly hit a guy or shoot him in their leg or whatever, you'll be fine. And
by guy, do you mean online guy or campaign guy?
Like I think I played a little bit. The online is really just like there's arenas you can play against people, but really even the online is like kind of like you can do co-op. You can do up to four people in your main quest to like help you out. And what's really nice is that you can, if you play with somebody at a higher level, when they shoot a guy, the loot that the enemy drops is going to be at a higher level. So if you play with somebody who's like, if you're like level 10, they're like level 30, they're going to be dropping level 30 loot, and so they can share that stuff with you even though you're not ready to have it yet. That's really nice.
That's pretty good. Make those high level friends.
Yeah, exactly. It's also real helpful if you're doing a second playthrough, because there's four different characters in that game. But I'm getting ahead of myself. They made a sequel to Borderlands, Borderlands 2, creative name, huh? And I held off buying it because I knew that that Borderlands 1 came out, and then a year later they did like Game of the Year edition, which had all the downloadable content built into it. So I went like, okay, I'm not going to buy Borderlands 2 right off the bat. I got other stuff to do. I'll get the Game of the Year version that has the higher level cap and everything else built into it. And I held off and I didn't buy the Game of the Year version. And then they did a summer sale on Xbox last year, and I bought it on download for like $10 or $15. So I'm like, all right, great, I got all this stuff here. I'm going to play Borderlands. But as it's a frequent theme in my life, I am so busy. I've got two kids now. I'm just so busy. I can't play. And I can't. This is not the type of game you want to play with kids. I wouldn't even play with my wife in the room because there's so much language in this game. It's just like, I'm afraid she's going to leave me if she hears some of the stuff that people have said. I've been holding off on even like starting a Borderlands 2. I haven't even like started up long enough to make a character. This is truly a pile of shame because I really, really liked the first one. I told a lot of people who don't normally play those types of games, even just now, to play it, and I didn't even play the second one, even though by all measures the second one is pretty good too. The other one I'll throw out there is Epic Mickey, another Wii game which I've held on to for 5 years or whatever, and I just haven't even like put it. I think it's still in the plastic wrap. But now that I've got two kids, like my kids are 2 and 3, they love Mickey Mouse. So I'm thinking maybe this is the type of game that I can play with them around, because I played the DuckTales game after I showed my daughter DuckTales the cartoon show, and she loved it, and we watched every single episode at least 7 times. It's the entire like first whatever 64 episodes are on Amazon Prime streaming, so shout out to them for having all those available. So I played the DuckTales game that was released. I think I got on PlayStation or whatever, so it came out there first for her, and she really enjoyed it because obviously it had like improved visuals to like more match the cartoon show and the voices of the cartoon characters, so it was so you can follow along there. So I think Epic Mickey might be a game I can play with my kids around. Adam, you got any shameful?
I got a ton of shameful things. I'm gonna go with Saints Row 4.
wow.
That's good. Yeah, so I love the Saints Row series, and when Saints Row 2 and 3 came out, I like picked them up and played them through right away, and they were freaking awesome, and I couldn't stop. And Saints Row 4, I played whenever I had time to play when it came out, and I just stopped playing games at one point, and I just never finished it. And I haven't really played a game to any considerable amount since then. So my pile of shame is like almost every video game I own or have gotten in the past 6 months. But Saints Row 4 is like, I've kind of described this before. The Saints Row series is like, the first Saints Row game was like kind of like you play like a gang member, but it's kind of silly. And then Saints Row 2 was like kind of amped up and way more fun and way more silly. And then Saints Row 3 was like to the whole next level, plus zombies, plus Burt Reynolds. And then Saints Row 4 is just like superpowers and aliens and running around and doing crazy crap. And it's just like, it's just the friggin' most amazing thing ever. And I wish I could just get back to it and finish it. But it's just not a priority for me. So shamefully, it sits there with all my other neglected games. And the only thing I really play these days is like 3DS games, because it's easy and I can play them anywhere.
I actually have Saints Row 4 as well, Adam. I played through like the first like maybe half hour of the game, and so maybe you and I should try to cross this one off together, because I know it's a co-op thing. You should probably just like pick a night, maybe after we do our regular podcast, No Topic Required, which you can find on iTunes, Stitcher, Tumblr, Facebook, et cetera. After we do our regular show, we should just hunker down and just do a couple of rounds of Saints Row 4, a couple missions or something.
Not a terrible idea.
Ernie,
it's super. The online is super fun. Like in 3, it was super fun to go around and just like, oh, I'm just gonna get in this tank and blow stuff up for like half an hour, and I just didn't get tired of it. It's awesome.
Sounds like fun to me. Ernie, what's on your shameful pile?
I've got quite a few games, but I think the one that I would rank up there most is Portal 2, because I played the first one. And I thought, you know, anybody who's played Portal knows how awesome this game is.
Oh, yeah.
It's a shooter, but it's not a shooter, because the only weapon you have is a gun that shoots portals, and you have two buttons to shoot two portals, an entrance and an exit, to try to solve puzzles instead of, like, shoot bad guys. So it's kind of a puzzle game in a first-person shooter format. And the first one was it's really creative with the puzzles and the way you had to solve them and shooting the portal for like taking advantage of physics and stuff like that, and it was great. And I played it. I rented Orange Box to just to play this game. And when I beat it, I played I don't know, one of the other games on it for one day, and then I turned the game in because I had played, you know, through my rental period. And then when Portal 1 was released on Xbox Live Arcade, I bought it again. Well, I bought it. I played through it again. I did everything plus the things I didn't do before. And I enjoyed it again. Portal 2 came out, and I just never picked it up when it came out, and I wasn't like super into it, even though I knew that I liked the game. And then recently, as of I think this year or so, I picked up the second game on Craigslist for $15, which is a pretty damn good deal for a game I'm pretty sure I'm going to enjoy a lot. And I think the night of picking it up, or the next day, I played about an hour and a half or 2 hours worth of the game, and I got a headache, I don't know, for whatever reason, playing the game or whatever. So I saved the game and I put the game down, and I haven't touched it since, which sucks, because I know I'm going to love the rest of the game, because it's just more Portal, and I love the first one, and the second one's doing things, I guess, kind of differently, because it's not as rigid. It doesn't feel, the first game is very much run like a test environment, which it is. And the second game seems more impromptu, which, you know, can create a little bit of difference in the experience for the second game, but I just haven't gotten back into it yet.
I have had played through Portal 2, and I really enjoyed it. I think I played the first Portal in one sitting. Because it's
wow.
It's not a super short game, but it's not super long either.
But
I remember getting it and like on a Friday night and staying up until like 1 a.m. and just going through the whole thing. Was it
really that short?
Yeah. I mean,
if you
don't get too stuck on any of the puzzles, like if you like once you get like a rhythm and go like, okay, I know what to do. Oh, this is amazing. I got to do this now. Like once you get a rhythm with those puzzles, you can do it in one sitting very easily. I mean, I'm not saying that it's a short sitting. I think I played for like 6 hours, so I'm not going to act like it was.
I think I got through most of the game in one sitting, and then I was like, all right, it's later, I'm tired or whatever, and then I finished it the next day.
Like I can do a Halo game, I think, in 7 hours or something like that. And once I get really good at it, if I play a lower difficulty, I can probably bang one out in six. But I think that was a really amazing game. The second one has so many different things that it does, and I was really playing for like the humor of the game. It's Stephen Merchant plays like a new enemy AI or I don't know what we're going to call it, AI, but you know there was GLaDOS in the first one,
spoilers. Jeez.
I'm just saying a different robot that you come in contact with.
Is this the first one from the beginning?
Yeah. Yeah. He's the first character you meet in that game. You don't come in contact with GLaDOS again until a different time. Right. And then there's also another character later in the game that you don't actually interact with them. You just find like there's like just audio recordings being played over. Like there were like motivational speeches that they're being played for the employees of Aperture Science at the time. And those are all hilarious too.
The game has a good humor factor.
Yeah, it's really worth playing just for the sense of humor in those scenes. But here's another one. It's like, geez, you and I should cross that one off because I've played through the whole thing of Portal 2. I've not played any of the multiplayer missions. The multiplayer missions are co-op. They're completely different puzzles from the main game. So
yeah, that's definitely like a whole other set of things.
Yeah,
I gotta beat the main game first, and then we can be like,
yeah.
Oh man, we have this other stuff we can do, and we can say we're gonna play, and then we never do it, we always do.
Well, you're saying you got 1 month left till your Xbox Live thing ends out. I got Portal 2 on PlayStation 3, but I will gladly pick up an Xbox 360 copy if we can do that.
I'll see if I can like bang out the campaign over the week.
Okay. I'll see if we can just bang out at least one more time in the show. Speaking of which, I think we banged out a pretty good Famicom Dojo, or at least an approximation of it, don't you guys think?
Yeah. Don't you guys let us know how we did. We're guest stars here on this. I'd like to hear that.
Hey, you can leave a comment at famicomdojo.tv. I'm sure this will be posted there, right?
There's like a phone number and everything too that they can call.
I'm not going to give out Sean's. I have Sean's personal phone number. I don't think that's the one he gives out.
Come on, Sean, get on your game and start sticking out those right contact infos.
Right. Anyway, but yeah, I know you can find the show on iTunes. It's on Stitcher. Got a Facebook page. There's always lots of people leaving comments on there. There's a Twitter feed you can follow. Famicom Dojo is a cool show. That's why we decided to do this. We're to swap out with them for 1 week. Sean and I have been talking about doing an April Fool's show for like 2 or 3 years, and this year I finally said something to him in enough time before us to actually do it before April Fool's actually went.
I did it for the money.
All right.
Wait, there's no money in this?
And meanwhile, you can also count on us, our regular show, No Topic Required, which is a kind of an improv comedy discussion show. We don't discuss improv comedy, but I would say we are improv comedy. If you didn't think this episode was funny, it's because we're doing it in the style of Famicom Dojo. It's not because we're not.
Yeah, that's my reason.
The one warning I'll say is I know that Sean keeps a much cleaner show. I have edited out all the cussing from this particular episode.
Sorry about that.
Very significant.
So that you can keep his clean show. But if you want to hear something that's a little bit more raw, We're happy to deliver it to you. Give us a shot. Where the show is called No Topic Required. It's on, of course, it's on iTunes, it's on Stitcher. We have a Tumblr page. I'm sure Sean will leave us a link somewhere on FamicomDojo.tv for us as well. Normally
we answer listener questions too.
Yeah, it's true. We answer the most crass listener questions you can possibly imagine. normally it's actually we have a fourth panel member named Sarah Rattle, who also helps round out the theme. Sarah's been present for this entire show, but has not said a single word the entire time. So
yeah.
She's showing a tremendous amount of restraint over the last hour. I believe she's just talking on the phone to somebody else. But you can hear her voice on our show as well. And you can catch her on TV on probably about a half dozen other shows, because she's our
industry insider.
Exactly. She's the most famous person on a podcast I've ever been with. So thank you again for listening to Famicom Dojo. Try out No Topic Required. And until next time, the dojo is closed.
Peace out.
Did you know I made up that phrase? I gave him the dojo is closed.
Really?
Yeah.
Can we play like the what's it called, the bell thing? Not the bell, the gong. After you said that, and play the bong sound.
He actually sent me all his audio files, so because I'm going to be editing this one, and he's going to be he's going to.
And then the music goes at RPG, RPG,
I'll be right back.
RPG, RPG, da 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 da. Famicom Dojo.